Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much. But when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to the What Culture Gaming Podcast. I'm your host, Scott Taylor, but joined by Ben Roy-Taylor.
Hello there.
And Mr. Jules Gill.
Hi.
Mr. Jules Gill returning from the land of streaming where he's been getting various streams off the ground. Mr. Jules Gill, how are you doing, sir?
I'm doing very well, thank you very much. It's a weird schedule that we've gotten ourselves into thanks to this whole new working around the lockdown stuff. So, I haven't been able to work with you guys as much as I want to, but we are finally together and potentially that will not be a problem from next Friday onward. Isn't that
hopefully.
Right, Scott?
Hopefully you've got a thing to announce, but we're going to wait and see how it goes. You just have to have a lot of hope around here, building the pillars, hoping you can put things on top of them. Hopefully. Yeah. Everything comes together. But for this week, I thought we'd do a Q&A podcast because this week in gaming has just been ridiculous from PS5, general thoughts on that, various things we can and can't say that other outlets can and can't say, Cyberpunk news, Watch Dogs Legion emerging from the ether, etc. So I just thought I'd ask people what they wanted to talk about. So first question comes from Ethan, who says, do you think that Cyberpunk is going to disappoint a lot of people who are expecting the game to be like GTA, but in the future? Mr. Benroy, what do you think about this proposal?
Well, if you want a GTA in the future, then yes, probably, because I doubt it's going to be like, I doubt the map's going to be as big, but then I think it's probably going to be more dense. I don't know. It's hard because I see all these criticisms and everyone like doubting Cyberpunk at this point and everyone not knowing what's going to happen and every headline about this game every day. And I'm just like, I'm ready just to sit there and wait. I'm ready just to forget about this thing until it is in my hands now. Because
do you think they should have just delayed it more from the off? Like just had a 2022 and it just arrives at some point?
No, because I don't want to wait till 2022.
But that's the only time to make it ready.
But if you're expecting a GTA in the future, then maybe. But I think that you should be more expecting something more in line with The Witcher kind of thing. Like, I wouldn't say The Witcher is putting your expectations down, because I would say The Witcher 3 is probably better than like any GTA game I've ever played. So,
oh, sweet Lord Roy.
Yeah, like I mean, Vice City is great, but I don't hold GTA 5 up on this pantheon of like,
San Andreas, Vice City, that's some tough competition. Jules, how do you come down on this madness?
I mean, I think it's the wrong thing to think of it as going to be that Cyberpunk is going to try and take whatever GTA is doing at the moment. If you want GTA in the future, then just play GTA online, because they've already got DeLoreans and all the other flying cars and race tracks that go off into the sky. That is the future, right? That's where we're all headed. We're just one giant pneumatic tube system away from that being what the future is. But I just think that I'm very excited for Cyberpunk. I feel like there's a lot going into it. I mean, admittedly, there's a lot of interesting things going on around it at the moment. We will deal with that at another point in time. But as in terms of the game itself, we're just looking at that, then it's probably the wrong experience to go in looking for GTA. This is definitely going to be much more structured. And hopefully, I actually hope that it is a lot more linear. I feel like you get better mission structures. I feel you get better narrative if you're directed just a little bit more. This freeform anarchy is great in the sense that you can approach missions however you want. But when you do that, you risk being able to actually tell a concise story within those little missions. So
it makes me super curious how they're split in, because you have all the different types that you can start as, the corpo and the street kid and whatever, and the nomad I think is the other one. And I don't know, I kind of want it to be as free form as possible, because personally I'm kind of sick of like the new age Rockstar approach, where it's like, go here, stand in this radius, press a button, wait for the guy, oh god, you did it too fast, restart, do it again. Like I kind of want like a set of goals, and then my build can like figure out how to do it.
I always think that it's so funny that GTA 5, like, everyone just thinks of it as like pure anarchy. But if you actually go back to look at the narrative, the first couple of missions of that were like boring.
Like, what the hell is that?
I don't think walk a dog, go put a car in there.
I don't think there'll be the jank of it. And I think, like, I don't think it'll be stand in a coloured circle as much as GTA had been throughout the years. But no, I mean, you just got it. You should never like say, oh, I want this game to be like this game and I want this game to be like this game, because everything should just be different and new.
Mm. I think as soon as they said, like, you know, there are wanted levels and there is a police presence and things like that, obviously it starts to draw any open world crime comparison to GTA. Mm-hmm. But I think for me, the nearest comparison is more like Skyrim, like just this open-ended thing that you can play infinite times and everything will be different. And the way that AI overlaps with each other should give you a different experience every time. Yeah. Next question from Mr. Jack Dale, who says, what are your favorite tie-in movie video games of the 2000s? His is Star Wars Episode 3 and The Incredibles. I forgot about The Incredibles game. Do either of you want to dive in with your best 2000s tie-in game?
I'm trying.
Does it have to be 2000s, does it?
It's got to be 2000s. My mind goes to the Lord of the Rings ones. I remember
the Two Towers.
Yeah.
Return of the King. What are you on about? It's all about Return.
What? No, 2000 is far superior.
Oh my God! I'm on a podcast of two weirdos. Return of the King is one of the
miles away from this
ever made. I even got Mr. Frodo to level 20. I got everyone to level 20. Like being Gandalf on the Wall of Gondor, being Gandalf in the courtyards, being Gandalf, Gandalf. Helm's Deep at the beginning of Return of the King as Gandalf, or perhaps being, you know, Gandalf at the Black Gate, for example. Mm. Or, you know, yeah, it's just, it's all in all a better, more perfect experience, whereas Two Towers was nice training wheels for them to make the actual great game they were trying to do.
Oh, see, I have such a soft spot for Two Towers just because I'm an absolutely huge fan of Dynasty Warriors. So when somebody was like, it's that, but with the Lord of the Rings skin, I was like, hell yeah, sign me up.
I was in a full-on like Matrix mode back then, so like when games used to have like slow motion toggles, like the Minority Report game was brilliant to me, at least, because you could put it in slow motion and just throw dudes through windows.
You've just reminded me, the Matrix Path of Neo, that was good for a bit of a laugh. I wouldn't say it's my favorite one.
It hasn't aged very well, but it was good at the time. But when you dodge bullets in that game, when you do the move from the first movie where he like leans backwards, you can run around in that pose, so he just runs around with like backwards, just dodging everything.
What about The Godfather? Like Godfather
was great. Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, the Scarface game for the PS2. That was actually really good.
That game had a swear button where you could just push the button to just install NPCs. And I want that in pretty much every open world game.
The reason behind why the game exists is just brilliant as well, because they said that obviously Tony gets shot out through the window and like he stands in the pool. But like they just explained that he's too angry to die. He's too coked up to go down.
Is this actually Crank the prequel then? Crank.
Oh, yeah, it is, yeah.
Why was Crunk. There never a Crank game? Like of all the movie tie-in properties, they could have done a pretty cool. I would have done like a side scrolling over the top brawler type thing.
It's the same with Hardcore Henry, because you know those like that film was so over the top that it just begged to be made into a video game. Seeing it was a film version of a video game, why not do the reverse and do that way? Mm-hmm. I'd play that game.
Can I also just vouch for the James Bond games of that era? Like even a Nightfire was
Agent Under Fire.
I mean, Nightfire is better than Agent Under Fire. I don't know why when one of our writers, Jack Pooley, did the rankings, he put Agent Under Fire as second best ever when it is not. And when I do the video, I will not have it as second because it is not.
Whoa. Calm it down. This thing, we need to state right now that technically neither of them qualify for this thing because they are not movie video game tie-ins per se. They're franchise tie-ins. So we have to say that GoldenEye is the best one. Because it's the only one that is actually based on a film that is good, because Tomorrow Never Dies bloody wasn't.
But it's like 2000s though, there wasn't any Bond movies that then had a game tie-in, because they all had like separate ones. Like Everything or Nothing was just a Pierce Brosnan.
Everything or Nothing was the fifth Pierce Brosnan film that would have never got made, sort of thing.
Mm. I guess so.
Defoe in it as well, and Jaws came back, and it was a lovely time. It told me that platinum was worth more than gold. I don't even know if that's real or not, but you know, that was a thing.
I'm trying to figure out what other games were like movie tie-ins in the 2000s. I'm trying to think of like other big ones. I know that there's some glaringly obvious ones and I just can't think of them. Like the ones that I'm thinking of, like the superhero ones, they were, Spider-Man 2.
Spider-Man 2 is the best. Like, they've only just gotten right again since like 2018. And then, it took some time. Next question from Ewan Callister, who says, recently Todd Howard was in an interview and said that it's hard to imagine Elder Scrolls being exclusive, despite Morrowind and Oblivion for their first years. Do you guys think it's possible that Bethesda's IPs will remain multi-platform, or they will indeed be Microsoft exclusives going forward? This is weird because every time Phil Spencer's been asked about this, he's just sort of danced around it and just sort of said, well, you know, I can't say. I'm just going to see how things go. But
it's like, yes, you can say, Phil. Yes, you can. Own like, the company now.
But I think the amount of money they paid for the acquisition, like, I think at some point they'll pull the trigger on that, even though they might get a bit of bad will. I just think that them just flopping it down and being like, Bethesda's only on Xbox. I think
You go, Ben, right, you go.
I was going to say, I think that we're going to have some sort of split, and so I've said this before, where either they keep the Juggernauts, which I'm calling like the Fallout, the Elder Scrolls, and I'm going to put Starfield in there as the Juggernaut, even though we've not seen any of it yet, but a logo.
Doom as well.
I think they separate them away from their more publishing arms, say like the Dooms, the Wolfensteins, the Preys, and I think they're going to be divided into those groups, and one group will be only exclusive to Xbox, and the other group will go everywhere. I don't know how that will exactly work out yet, but I think not all of them will be exclusive and not all of them will be everywhere. I think there's going to be a few picked out.
It might be the case that anything that's already been announced is going to be cross-platform, and anything that's new will be under this sort of like new brand of like Bethesda original style thing where they are Xbox exclusive. But I feel like after the amount of money that Microsoft has just whapped on the table for that, I really think it would be foolish of them to then limit themselves sales-wise by going console exclusive. Yes, you will sell more consoles, but you make much more money by selling video games. That's the whole point of like of how
consoles
work.
It makes you wonder, like, if they were going to do it, I would, because they announced that they bought Bethesda or whatever, like it was like a week before the pre-orders went live or right alongside on the Xbox.
Yeah, but that's just a hype of the pre-orders. In terms of like actual like business-minded approaches, you would definitely not make them exclusive when they are that big. And Skyrim is one of the best-selling games ever. Like, if you want that to happen again, you're going to have to keep them cross-platform. Then you might do some like timed exclusives, because obviously they're going to try and usher in as much microtransactions, like event-style things for these games, and turn them into pseudo MMORPGs as best they can. So there will be timed exclusive for Microsoft's in terms of like, this event is only for them, but the game, the vanilla game, is on every single platform.
Yeah,
I think we all think like I think some of the time, I'm not saying anyone here, like everyone always thinks of it as like too much of a small deal, like they've spent $7 billion, they've got to get that $7 billion back right away. But this is going to be something that they're going to be earning back long before probably we're gone. Like for the next 20-30 years, they're going to be eking that money back. But it's never good. They pay for this in cash, they pay for it more. They could buy like,
imagine that they just had the dollar, the sign, the bag with the dollar sign on, just
in unmarked bills. Phil Spencer carried suitcases to Todd Howard's house. Like, there you go, mate. And then
like the Hamburglar.
It's like, how many shovelfuls of money would you like today?
He just keeps shoveling until they smile and he knows that he's in. Yeah.
You know what he did? He actually paid them all in caps. He did that for a laugh.
Oh yeah, yeah.
7 billion caps. There you go, mate.
That one fan that had like 20 million of them was him all along.
Yeah.
I think at some point they'll take advantage of the deal. They spent so much money on it. They just have to do something with it.
Think about it this way. If they bought all of the rights to the games, if they own them outright, then they're going to be making the money back on the titles that are already in existence. Like Skyrim is not selling nearly as well as it did, but it's still rakes money hand over fist, and so does the DLC, so does all of the Wolfenstein stuff that they've got and everything else that they've got their name Fallout stuff, like it's going to be making the money. Like,
speaking of Skyrim, have you ever played it on an Alexa?
No.
Because that was a thing they announced and it was actually real, and it's quite funny to play on
Alexa. I thought that was a joke.
No, it's real. If you play Skyrim to an Alexa, sorry anyone's Alexa is listening, you can play Skyrim.
Alexa, play Skyrim. Good, now that we've got that out of the way. Let's do the next question. This one comes from Matty K, who says, how do you guys feel about crunch culture and how should we respect the devs that go through it? Do we buy the games? Do we boycott? It feels like something that feels like something should be said and done for the sake of the devs and their lives, but it's hard to know what.
Crunch culture, just flat out, like there's no other alternative. It is a disgusting practice and should not be supported. How you go about voting to not support these things is unfortunately with your wallets, but the only person that will hurt at the end of the day will be the developers themselves, because it's not going to be the top guys losing their bonuses and being marched out. It's going to be It's going to be the people working on the game every single day in the trenches, and they are going to just be farmed out to outside freelance people, things like that. Like, it's an incredibly difficult situation to weigh up, and there is no clear-cut way on how to address this other than by admonishing publicly on every forum that you have possible those publishers that are allowing this to happen and encouraging it to happen in the future.
My thoughts are that it's very much like game by game cases, like the basis. Mm-hmm. Because anything forced is completely like abhorrent, like you said, like, you know, you're getting forced to do extended hours, things like that. In the case of CDPR finding out that they have to crunch for the December deadline, they found out alongside the public finding out, stuff like that is
horrible.
Something that was fascinating though, because I think the more that comes out about it, I think it's an ongoing conversation. I think it's all about the balance. It's whatever those individuals on those teams want to do as well. Because Naughty Dog, when something came out about Last of Us 2, there was a whole report about some devs on Naughty Dog saying like, well, look, we enjoy these long hours. We're perfectionists for some members of the team and we want to work longer.
But they should not be allowed to speak for the rest of the team. Like, I really
I thought you were going to go into something else.
I was just about to say, like, I feel like if you have somebody out who is towing the company line saying, no, long hours are great. I love not being able to see my family. Like, that is a small minority of people that are going to be in that position.
Yeah, that was obviously the thing from the CDPR head guy who was like, oh, no, a crunch wasn't a problem. But when Neil Druckmann was on Kind of Funny, he was like, look, we put restrictions in place. We made people go home at, like, respectable times, and they didn't want it. So I think it's definitely, like, developer by developer case. And for me, it comes down to what are people being forced to do? Like, that's the crux of the psychology. Yeah.
Is there a way, like, and excuse me if I seem really like don't have knowledge on the subject, but like, what about like the unionization of like developers that allows them to say, no, we are legally not going to work this and there's nothing you can do about it and you can't force us to do that? It seems like crunch culture only exists because there's a loophole for it to exist.
True. But yeah, I mean, that would like be a knock-on effect of a dev company being forced to do something they don't want to do and then being able to say, well, look, my union rights say that I'm not going to stay X number of hours or X number of hours during the week and stuff. But there's a whole thing around how game devs are starting to unionize more. I know Jason Schreier has been pushing for that more. For me, it just comes down to like, it's like human rights, workers' rights. Like, what do you want to do as a creative? Like, in CDPR's case, which obviously spurred a lot of these recent conversations, they don't answer to anybody above themselves other than the shareholders. And I think that game, because it's been in development for 7 years, has become this big overblown full-on, you know, let's, you know, throw the kitchen sink at it and just keep going, and then now they have to try and rein it together, and it just it feels unwieldy. And at some point they're just having to throw human hours at that until it's done, which is a horrible, you know, it's such a knock-on effect of mismanagement and things like that. But I don't even know how you would manage for this because it hasn't been done before. So I think that anyone being forced to do something for massive amounts of time is just horrible, but there's so much nuance to it, especially case by case, game by game, project by project. Benro, what do you think about the whole thing?
I think it's just case by case and person by person and project by project. And so just every situation is different. And I think unique in the way, like, no one should force anyone to do anything. It's just this, I think I'm totally against that, but I can't speak for it as a whole. Like, the idea of crunch is bad, yes, but also, like, if people want to work longer hours, then let them. But then obviously those people should be like, it's great. And then they got, so even if it's just 7 or 8 out of like, say, 500 that are like proper suffering and really wish they could see their family, then they should be allowed to opt out of it. But then obviously, yeah, you've been there, and like I've even been there with certain projects before, and like not in games but something else, but like you everyone sort of putting together, you all want to keep going because you all want to keep doing the thing. And I think that's what happens at Naughty Dog as well. You all want to keep doing the work and get the thing out that you really care about and you're passionate about. You want to get, like, the term suffering for your art, like, you shouldn't have to, but it's like a term that people have thrown out forever. But again, I'm totally against people being forced, but then again, like, I can't speak for every situation as a whole sort of thing.
I think some of the stuff that's been fascinating is Mike Bithell's various conversations on crunch when he's been on Play Watch Listen, the podcast, because he's completely anti-crunch, and he was like, there's always ways to make sure that people are approaching it satisfactorily, that they can go home when they need to and things like that, and the project still gets done. But he says, you know, the games that he's putting together as Bithell, the company, like the John Wick game, he has a solitaire game coming up, like smaller sort of indie projects. He was saying, like, he can't speak to the size of something like a AAA dev, but it does seem like there needs to be a conversation around around the mentality that you described, Benroy, but the obviously the potential for like the toxic undercurrent of that to be like, you know, because there's always the example given of like someone gets up to leave at the end of a day and everyone else sort of like looks at them, or there's that general feeling of like, well, yeah, I can't be the first one to leave because no one else has left. Yeah. And then you end up working way, way longer. But as like a comparison, like I didn't take a break yesterday just because of stuff that I'm doing with the PS5. And that was because time completely got away from me. But occasionally across the day, I did realize the stupidity of that and then chose to keep working. But that was completely my choice to do so. So I think for me personally, I can only speak for myself. It would be, if I want to do extra time, I will choose to do that. But I would hate if someone said, you have to stay behind and do extra time. I think it's all down to the individual and then project.
Potentially down to incentivization as well. Like if it was incentivized that you would get like a percentage, or if you got like time off afterwards, or if you got that, then maybe people would be more willing to do that. But like you say, it all comes down to it. The crunch definition is being forced to do something.
Yes.
That's the problem that we have. Like no one should be forced to do anything that is outside of their job remit. Like that's
one thing
as.
As well is like that whole thing of boycotting the end product. I don't think that does anything. Mainly because there was a story, I can't think which podcast it was on now, but it was someone had said that they were talking to one of the developers in CDPR, and they'd said that they felt they couldn't say that they were proud of the game because of all the conversations around it. And it's like, if you've worked on something that took you this long and you did put your heart and soul into it, I think you should be able to stand tall and say, I accomplished this thing. And maybe you went through some insane stresses to get there, but you still made something amazing at the end of it. Or even if you didn't, you still got through it. And I think that that whole idea of, you know, fobbing off the entire game and things like that, for me, that doesn't address the problem enough. There's not enough nuance in that, because you're throwing the middle finger up to all the people, the hundreds of people that put the game together, versus the, you know, executive mandate, the corporate side of it that forces people into horrible working conditions. Whereas you should reward the people that actually coded the thing in the first place.
And you shouldn't like demonize the people that are proud. Like, see, if someone says, oh, I worked this many hours this week, they're saying in the proud way, where they're proud because they put the hard work and they put their passion in. I don't think you should demonize that either. But then like,
not if it was their choice.
As long as they're not going, I did this, but you didn't do that. It's more like if it's them doing it out of the passion and the love for the thing they do. Cause like you say, you didn't take a break yesterday. I keep forgetting to take breaks. And like when I'm working on a specific video that I'm doing like passionate about, or like if I'm writing my own things after work, like I'm always like trying to keep my mind going and I get lost away. And then I realize, oh, it's like whatever time at night now, I should probably have some wine or go to bed sort of thing. Like it's just,
I think it's
so like different for everybody. But we're all different. It's like there's like thousands of different people. Like what it's too hard to quantify in one sweeping ever statement, I think.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term medical plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term medical plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
This podcast is brought to you by Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. One of the things I love about Indeed is that it just makes hiring all in one place so easy, because you just get unparalleled access to job seekers. Plus, listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/WCG. Just go to Indeed.com/WCG right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/WCG. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
I think the ongoing conversations definitely help. But I think, like, yeah, I mean, I think, like you said, it changes each time. And like Jules said, it's the idea of being forced to do something is obviously the part that needs to be completely stamped out. And even having these conversations, I think, helps with general sort of awareness of crunch. And then on the dev side, being able to open up conversations between executives and devs and things like that.
It's just a funny situation. Like, not funny, but like I've worked in the supermarket before, and like, well, you can't go yet because this isn't set up for the rest of the day, or this isn't, we need to get some stock take stuff. They're like, it happens in like almost all walks of like work as well. Like, I'm not saying it happens here, so it's fine, but like, yeah, it's just it always happens. It happens so many times everywhere, which should be addressed, but it's like, it's always never like really labeled as that. But it's just with like, because there's such an explosion of it now in the video game sphere. But yeah, at the end of the day, as we've all said, as Jules first said, you just should never force it, and that's the end. That's the bottom line.
I think more people than ever are aware of the exploitation of workers underneath a capitalistic sensibility. And I get all that. I think it's a much wider conversation, but I think so many more people are aware of workers' rights and your own rights and your own worth. And I think it spurs these conversations on, which is only, can only be a good thing. Like, it only puts pressure on the people who create the wrong rule sets in the first place. So hopefully it all works out. Jules, did you have any closing thoughts, or are you the same?
I think that you guys have summed it up pretty well with that. It's a case of just making sure that we are, every single outlet possible is making other people aware of what is going on in these situations, making sure that the dialogues are always happening. And while I have mixed feelings on the not buying a video game and voting with your wallets, it is unfortunately only going to punish the people working on the front line. So that needs to change. Yes. There needs to be some security measures in place to protect those people.
Mm. I did see, again, I can't think of the specific person who said it, but there was another write-up about how that idea of boycotting the final product maybe doesn't directly impact the wages of the people that made it, that they're obviously paid alongside the project. So they're already, they're okay, they're financially.
But it's, the thing is that, like, so for example, if we decided that we wanted to boycott Watch Dogs Legion because of everything that's been going on with the higher-ups in Ubisoft and the allegations that are going on there, then I would say that that is a double-edged sword, because yes, you are sticking it to them and showing them that they're one of their biggest franchises is going to suffer as a direct result of the actions of the people in the upper management. Unfortunately, what it really means is they have huge teams that work on Watch Dogs, and if we don't buy them, all they're going to see is, we're not going to make a sequel of that, and that team will either get absorbed or disbanded.
Or their work just doesn't get seen. Like, there's some incredible art, like the art department for Assassin's Creed Unity. Assassin's Creed Unity is one of the most detailed, like, gorgeous looking games when it's working, and the art direction in that game is incredible. And it barely got seen because, I mean, and you know, we were as guilty as that too, of just being like, well, the faces are falling off, it's a complete mess and whatever. But I, you know, the interiors for that game, the research that went into it, it's a gorgeous looking game and it should be seen by people. But yeah, it's an incredibly nuanced, complex thing. But I think that everybody contributing to the conversation hopefully does some good over time. It's just, it's going to be a case of every individual team tackling it how they can.
What it is making sure that there are no secrets left unearthed. Like, as long as it's all in the public eye, then it's down to that that case-by-case situation that we've been talking about. It's made a lot easier because then legal situations become clearer. You can say, okay, right, I feel supported by the public now. I'm able to share my stories without fear of being admonished by my teammates or the higher-ups.
Yeah.
If even if it goes partway in explaining why a game is released in a certain state, or like that, it's all, the more information we get as the public looking into a project, the better it is in the long run for moving situations like this along.
Yeah, and the more ammunition that someone on the creative side has to be able to say, look, this is how this is going to go if you don't give us the time, the appropriate time, the care and attention. One other thing from the Bithell side of stuff was just saying that crunch fundamentally doesn't work. You do worse work when you're stressed out and struggling and it's not your choice to do it.
Yeah.
And things like that. So it doesn't even tick the box on the corporate side of like, oh, we're just going to get it out faster because we've worked faster. It's like, no, you'll just get a broken product. You'll get something that doesn't work. It's a hell of a thing. And I think that that might be the conversation that dominates the next generation, because games are bigger than ever. And I think that these conversations will just happen more. Yeah. So next question from Greg, which is one that I can't really answer, but I'll talk around it. It's a PS5 one, be very quick. Okay. Who says, how is the upscaling, if any, on games like Death Stranding? That already looked pretty good on PS4 Pro. That's a PS5 question. I can't tell you. I think it's probably going to be all right.
Speaking about PS5, though, I'm really intrigued. Like, Neil had a really good question, and he wanted to know, does the iToy work on the PS5?
What's that, mate?
It's a great peripheral that came out during the PlayStation 2 era. You could play it in the Blockbuster.
Did it even work on the PS4?
I mean, I never tested it. That's science. I'm not a scientist.
I had an iToy. I love the iToy. One of my friends sold all of his games to get an iToy because he was that blown away by the technology of it. And we played Washy Washy Windows every afternoon.
Yep. Yeah, I was about to say, that's the only game worth playing on.
You just put your hand at the front of the camera like that and you just win.
When I'm cleaning Windows. It was brilliant. And so I don't know how it works on the PlayStation 5. I don't even know if it works on the PS4. I think the last thing that had a lens was Eye of Judgment on PS3.
Are you saying you've got an iToy embargo at the moment?
I'm not saying that, but I am saying that I can't speak to anything other than how the DualSense works with one level of Astro Boy, and sadly, that doesn't cross over with the iToy.
Damn.
So I'll have to do a bit more experimentation. Maybe it will if I plug it in. Next question from Son of Kratos. Four quick questions here. Does the PS5 sound like a rocket? I don't know, but when I was playing the one level on Astro Boy, it didn't. Number two, Glover, is there going to be a remake, Mr. Penroy?
There will be.
I don't think we'll ever get a Glover remake. We have to keep the flag flying.
They were screwed over by Nintendo. They got offered a nice deal. They thought they'd take it, and then they sold half as much as they've bought. If they didn't buy all these extra carts, we would have got the Glover too.
Jules starts the countdown on his watch until Benroy brings up Colin Salmon.
he's actually got a new Twitter picture recently. It's quite good. You should check it out.
It's going to be Glover starring Colin Salmon.
Oh
as
my
Glover.
God, he would melt. Mr. Ben, if there were zombies chasing him, that's the Benroy triple. Number three from this guy is thoughts on Watch Dogs Legion. Our thoughts are that I didn't buy it, neither did Jules, and I think Benroy got it and then didn't want to play it.
I purchased it. I want to play it. I've been in this platinum sort of like phase for about 2 weeks now where I've just I need more, man. I need to clean them up before the PlayStation. Even though I could play all these games on the PS5, like backwards compat, it's sounded like the only game I own on that list that I can't play is Hitman Go. But yeah, I've just been in that sort of like I've been hungry for Platinums, and now I've done that, I'm gonna play some Legions probably Sunday evening. Probably.
Okay. Jules, do you see yourself picking up Watch Dogs Legion?
Not in the slightest, my friend. No, it's one of those things where like I could be told that it's the greatest thing since the second coming of Christ. But for me, Ubisoft are in a bit of a sticky situation. I don't really want to support their products at the moment. I know this is going back to the conversation we had before, but it's just a case of I don't like the fact that they release heavily politicized games and then say that they are not politicized at all. I don't like the fact that the way that they're run. I don't like the mismanagement. I don't like the games design philosophy that they approach with some certain things with. So I would love to be proved wrong.
That's just
my stance at the moment.
No, we should tag that on to the stuff that we said before. If you want to vote with your wallet and you want to make a statement and you can get the word out of conversations, obviously with us, we have more of a platform to do that. That's 100% valid too. Like that, you know, it's still going to make a mark. It's still going to be a conversation. It's still going to be something that contributes to the overall progression of addressing that stuff going forward. The last question from this.
Sorry, I just want to make one thing clear because it means that I have taken a very contrary position to Benroy. I'm in no way criticizing your decision to buy the game, nor anyone else's doing that. This is just my personal choice, okay?
Yeah,
nothing to do with any of that.
No, if your personal whims dictated what we do, I'd be living on Dynasty Warriors, and I'd...
I know, eating vegan diet, mate.
I've been starting the vegan food. Vegan burgers, pretty good.
Vegan fried chicken, terrible. Let's keep going.
I will give you that one, mate. We definitely do not have that one down yet.
Vegan chorizo sausages were a little bit rubbery, but I love the whole science side of it. Like, can you replicate meat products with science? Like, that just gets me in.
My favorite thing is I had the 3D printed steak thing, because that like a friend of mine like had one of the. Well, yeah, there's this whole thing going around now where you can get this specific brand that is literally a 3D printed steak that is like protein molecules.
Oh, you don't make
that
at home. You don't.
3D yeah, it was. We had it out in New York when we went to that tiny little restaurant. We were just there like, oh, this is really nice. But you could actually see the lines, the design lines on it. Weird. Very weird.
It's kind of blowing my mind a little bit. If you could get a 3D printed food, like in your house, like a gun that just shoots a steak, like I would love that.
sorry.
What?
Sorry.
I just want to just blast
it. It's just the fact that you described it as a gun. Like, I don't know why that's completely possible.
It's just a little laser gun.
Open wide, clog.
I imagine it as the makeup gun from, was it? Simpsons.
The Simpsons, yeah.
You've got it set on smear. I've got mine set on steak. I just want to shoot the table and there'd be a steak there. The last question from Son of Kratos was, seriously, when's that Glover remake coming? Which sadly is...
I mean,
have any
the Glover remake will come when... Look, I'm growing in power. Like, I'm rising my forces. And at one point, I will have the ability to make this happen. And it doesn't matter. Like, we'll crowdfund it. We'll buy the license. We'll get there. And Glover will come again one day. Glover will rise again, and Glover will be.
Are you making a public pledge to all those who can hear your voice that someday you will be instrumental in bringing back Glover?
I think Glover and maybe Buck Bumble have been screwed over in our history of this. Like, we've had Crash come back and all that, and people talk about Jak and Daxter like that's a thing, but Glover is
a thing.
Glover is one of the greatest games to be thrown away, and also I mean, put Glover in London, like Watch Dogs Legions. That's why I'm buying that game for London, because I miss it so much.
So the Glover would just be like, all right, mate, all right, geez.
If you said Glover in London, I mean, apparently...
Was he going to be rolling around a paper cup instead? I mean,
have you ever seen the amount of littering in London? You could roll around, go through Camden Market.
That's why Katamari Damacy needs to be set in London, so we can roll up the trash.
Katamari versus Glover.
Okay, fine. No, I'm sold now.
Get Mr. Domino in while you're on, because he's been gone.
No one can stop Mr. Domino.
Can we also get the Sneak King in there as well? Just him sneaking about in the background.
That's just crazy.
The Tasmanian Tiger. I mean, just do...
Pepsi Man's calling.
Yeah.
Next question from Matthias Grimm. We sort of touched on this with Bond stuff. He's just saying, why is no one doing anything with the Bond property? And he says, there's so much you could do with infiltration, assassination, the gadgets, the cars, the action, the villains. Put it with a proper, exciting story and its money. Love you all. Stay safe. We touched on Bond before, and thank you very much. I think, I don't know, Bond's in a weird spot. Like, the movies still make an absolute bucket load, but I don't think that pop culture doesn't really tend to dissect it very much. It's just sort of, any Bond movie, cool, and then we all sort of move on.
I literally think that's because you're in a different area of pop culture, whereas other people, like, I think there is a you're first time for Bond. Like, I think it's, especially the Daniel Craig era, it's been so weird because we had Casino Royale came out amazing. Then Quantum of Solace was, like, weirdly thrown about because of the writer's strike. Also, can I just say here, why did they release it in 2008 and not 2007? The year was 007, you fools. and then Skyfall came out, and that was meant to be his last one, and he wanted to slit his wrists. Then Spectre. I think it's because, whereas with the Pierce Brosnan, they were sort of like clockwork coming out, whereas now they've been so like dotty and like spotting, like, this has been like the longest period we've had without a Bond film ever.
It's the sporadic nature that kills the fuel of the franchise.
I think they're afraid of doing the non-film tie-ins. Like, when they have done that, like, they've been excellent. Like, I only ever got to dabble in Bloodstone, but that was great. Like, Everything or Nothing, almost a perfect Bond game. Like, I think I think you want to have the Bond of the time, and it's probably going to cost a lot to get Daniel Craig's face and likeness in that game as well. I think we're going to get another try again on the next go round.
I think Craig's face is in the Quantum of Solace game, the one that was like the Call of Duty engine.
And GoldenEye, the Reloaded remake.
I think he's in Bloodstone as well. But I don't know. I think the overall cost of a AAA Bond game would be so much more than it was even 10 years ago. So I guess 15 years ago.
I think there's an idea of the Bond games being at a certain level, so people won't want to fork. Like, the masses won't want to fork out for that. Whereas, like, really, they're probably, the quality levels are up there, and it costs like up there to get done something.
Yeah.
I'm doing up there as like, for the audio listeners, I'm just putting my hands really high in the air as a scale. Sort of thing.
It's all the way up there, to be honest.
Bond games are actually, like, if you think about it, they're quite difficult to manufacture in terms of what Bond sets up as having to happen in each of his films. Like, you're going to have a decent driving section, like, hands down. You're going to have to absolutely nail the combat and make sure that the shooting's really, really good. He's going to have so many exotic locations, which are going to be incredibly hard to, like, produce and, like, get realistic ones as well, because people love the fact that it's set in a specific place. And then you'll have to find writers that'll be able to bring a villain to life that is like charismatic enough to make you care about what's going on in the story. Like, they, all of those elements together, that's a really difficult thing to pull off.
Yeah, you got to, like, push buttons to woo a lady as well.
Is it Killer? No, not Killer 7. What's the one where it's like you enter gigolo mode? You know the one I'm talking about. The one I'm talking about. It's damn it, that's gonna annoy
me. This feels like a list. The craziest.
Not Shadows of the Damned. That game where you go to hell and you've got a giant gun that's also your penis.
That is Shadows of the Damned.
That's who's the guy who made that? The director is that the same
one?
Yeah. So he obviously did Suda 51. Also did the No More Heroes stuff, right?
Yes.
Okay. He's got another game out that allows you to have, you're an assassin who also woos ladies at night.
Are you not thinking of that D4 thing, that Dark Dreams Don't Die or whatever?
Potentially.
The one where the female woman that you live next to is a cat?
No, that sounds batty enough to be a different game.
Okay. we've not taken something in between questions. This is definitely vaguely real, but we'll try and clean it up for next time. Last question. We did get a ton of questions. Thank you all very, very much for submitting stuff. We'll do another Q&A podcast at some point in the future, hopefully this time next week. But the last question from ScottyBoy292, who isn't me, but I do like that name a lot. With the announcement of Netflix's Assassin's Creed, are there any other video game properties you would like Netflix to get their grubby little hands on? Or should video game TV series be left well alone? Maybe there's a Netflix series that would actually make a better video game. For the latter bit, I'm going to say, why was there never a good Breaking Bad game? Because the only Breaking Bad game we got was that weird mobile one where you've got to slot stuff in.
Heisenberg was technically in GTA 5. There was the cook and there was that segment where they parodied it for a bit, but yeah.
I would love, there's two franchises that I would love to see get their own Netflix shows. Okay. And the first one is Ratchet and Clank is set up perfectly for an episodic format of them going around the galaxy, solving adventures. Could be a pseudo kids TV show, but with that sort of Adventure Time, a little bit for adults thing.
Adventure Time style Ratchet and Clank.
And also the other one would be a HBO, really serious, really bleak, Chernobyl style version of Fallout. Imagine that they're trapped in the vault.
We're getting the Fallout thing.
No, we're not, are we? On this. When did they announce this?
Jules, if you just say it, it comes true, mate. Fallout's been announced for a couple months.
Oh, okay, fair enough. It's in the preliminary stages, is it?
Yeah. Well, there's nothing other than just it's happening. I think we've got a little bit. Maybe that's about it.
Well, I'll take it back then.
I'll offer you Elder Scrolls instead.
Fair enough.
I don't know, Benroy. What's your thoughts? You've been staring at your library.
Yeah, I've been staring at it. I'm just like. I was like, well, I can't say Resident Evil because we're getting that anyway. So I was thinking, you know what? I think you know what they could achieve, especially with the first few seasons and see if it does well, a Metro series because, you know, all in indoor sets and you have to like spruce out for these big wide sort of things. I think Metro would be really good to get in there. Maybe a Wolfenstein as well, but I'm going for Metro here.
Metro, all the very sort of like philosophical conversations that come out and all these different cultures meshing over each other. Like, yeah, that'd be really, really cool.
Have you watched The Hunters yet? Which is like the one with Al Pacino and it's all about like Nazi killing. It's on Amazon original. It looks amazing. Mm. So yeah, if that took off, then Wolfenstein definitely.
Sure.
Any opportunity to kill more Nazis, please.
You could do like a really cool, like slick Lovecraftian Bloodborne thing as well, like a different beast.
Oh, damn. Well, like Supernatural.
Kind of like Supernatural, but like more gritty, gritty. And just give me like more transforming weapons would be kind of cool. My shout would just be animated Shovel Knight. Just give me like a really good, poppy, rounded, colorful, gorgeous version of Shovel Knight with a different knight each week that he sort of befriends or maybe bashes with a shovel. I don't really care as long as it comes together. So yes, thank you all again for submitting so many questions. We'll get to the rest of them in due time. But for now, this has been the What Culture Gaming Podcast. I've been your host, Scott Tilford, joined by Ben Returner.
Glover, available now on N64.
Hi, Mr. Jules Gill.
Thank you for having me, mate.
I'll catch you next time. Bye.
Bye.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.